Welcome to the Curious Women Podcast. I'm your host, Kylie Fignano, and I'm here with my co-host, Meg Hager. Here, we're going to have chats about women's health to teach you the things that you didn't know you didn't know.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Curious Women Podcast. We are so excited to share Amber's story with you this week, but we just wanted to pop in and let you know really fast that there are some pretty sensitive topics we'll be discussing this week, including eating disorders and sexual abuse. So Amber was gracious enough to share her story with us on this week's episode, but if these are topics that you are not ready to hear about or you choose not to, tune into this one later or never, whatever feels good for you. I wanted to introduce you guys to a little friend of mine. I'm so excited. I love him so much.
It's a straw, isn't it?
It's kind of a straw. You can hear the clinking, can't you?
I can hear it.
I don't want to get stuff on my laptop. Do you see him? He's a little straw.
Is he a tea steeper?
He's a tea steeper. Look how freaking cute he is.
I have never in my life. That's amazing.
I am.
Is he not the cutest thing?
A little sloth. What are you drinking? What's your tea? Ginseng, Ovacetal.
Yes. And can you tell I added something special in it this morning?
Did you put pomegranate or cranberry?
You're close. No, I understand why you think that, because Amber, I'm the weirdo who just randomly, I was sick for like 2 solid weeks, and the only thing I had in my fridge was like 3 eggs and some leftover pomegranate juice for some reason. It was so random. So I understand why you think that, but no, this is hibiscus tea. That's what the sloth is for.
Sounds really good.
Yeah, it's pretty tasty. And then I also have my coffee, as usual, because we needed a little boost this morning. We did not sleep well last night.
I didn't either. Did you sleep, Amber? Do you sleep anymore, ever?
Yeah, really good. We have a 3.5-month-old. That's why she's asking that. And he's a rock star at sleep. Like, he's a baller. And so he woke up at 4. Well, he woke up at 3, and then but Ben does the, if it's before 4:30, it's all Ben. If it's after, it's me. So it's a very clear communication. I just hit the clock and I'm like, see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
And he's still, so he faked him out. He got up at what Ben thought was 3, but then he fell back asleep. So Ben went all the way downstairs and he actually didn't wake up until 4, but then he slept from 4 to like 8 o'clock. So I had a schedule for a walk, had like a super spacious morning. Yeah, it was really good. So yeah, I'm sleeping great and I love my melatonin and you know, life is good.
That's great. The mama. Yes. Oh my God. That's so great.
What are you drinking, Amber?
I've got 2 things going on. I got, always have a lot of water and this has like minerals in it. Mm-hmm. So that's fun. And then I just grabbed this for lunch, but I'm obsessed. This is my favorite Spindrift.
Oh, on the planet.
Pineapple.
It's so good. So a little afternoon guilty pleasure.
Yeah. Yes.
Love Spindrift.
Me too. Mm-hmm. It's the best one. Like, come at me if you're going to tell me there's a better seltzer than Spindrift.
No, I agree. I love it. I do not love it as much as Olipop, but they're not the same thing. So. Mm.
Yep. Mm. Yep.
What minerals do you put in your, sorry, Kylie.
So I don't know. It's something that my naturopath gave me. It has magical things in it. I'm not really sure. My office is up in a loft, so it's very difficult for me to get down from here quickly. So it's all the way downstairs.
With things in your hands.
Yes.
Oh yeah. No, I was just curious because minerals and water and mineral has come up a couple times on the show. So I'm getting curious about what these minerals are that everyone's putting in their
magical
water.
Unicorn mineral.
Yeah. It's a little magical mix. Yeah. Kylie, tell us, what are you drinking? It looks beautiful.
I have a couple things too. It actually looks disgusting, I think, but it's just magnesium.
Oh,
good times.
It's good. It's orange. It's not too sweet. I like it. And then I've got, I made a little, 4-sigmatic adapt, like the calm version.
Yeah.
With that ripple milk.
Oh yeah. Do you like it?
I do like it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big fan. Very happy. Yay. That was my first sip. I saved it for the, guys, we have We have Amber with us today, and I think that I'm going to let you tell us all about who you are, but I will start by saying I work with Amber, and I think that you'll get this picture when we start talking more. But one of the things that I feel when I'm working with people is that I have it's important to me, and I feel like I have I'm able to make them feel seen and heard, listen to them, and hold space. And so in return, when I'm working with people, and I might not have always recognized this before, I need that a lot because I know what it feels like to give it. And Amber is one of those people who like knows pieces of you that you don't know yourself without ever having actually necessarily met, although we did meet in person, to be honest. So why don't you go ahead and tell us who you are, start with your story, what you do, and then we'll kind of get into it. We'll see where it takes us.
It's such a joy, Kylie, to get to be a part of your team because you're just such a magical soul, right, Meg? I mean,
oh my gosh, yeah. So much. I'm your biggest fan.
Yeah.
I believe that, Meg.
You guys didn't know, but this is actually an episode that we're just going to tell Kylie how much we adore her.
Yeah, that's all we're going to do is just tell Kylie how amazing she is. But she is, and she should know that. I mean, you should know that and you should feel that. So, and everybody watching this, you should know that about yourself too. You know, I think that that's the deep practice here. And the reality is that for most of us, that's a hard sell. And we certainly didn't think that probably in the rearview mirror of most of our stories. And so I can connect with everybody here who has maybe some inner drama with yourself and have just enormous empathy and compassion for what that feels like. And I think that's something to say right around, you know, being able to connect and have that deep compassion. It's because we've had to walk this path and do really deep work on ourselves. And so, you know, in present day, I'm a business coach and I help coaches and creatives do a couple simple things. One, change the way they think about themselves and what's possible for their life. Two, help more people because I work with people who really want to help people in a deep way. And then thus help them make more money in the process because that piece is really, really important in this puzzle too. And it's just a very integrated approach. And so that's what my work in the world is about. I'm also an author. I've written a couple books and I have a podcast and I'm a mom of two babies, one conceived through fertility treatments, one adopted very recently, our sweet boy, Alex. I'm a wife to my best friend, Ben. And fellow entrepreneur, our newest endeavor is he's now renting out our RV and like Airbnb-ing it. And
ooh,
it's been really
fun.
Cool. Yeah, it's been really, really cool. I'm like, honey, can we rent it for one trip?
Walk off the calendar.
Can we have a turn?
I'm like, we get to use our RV one time this summer. So we are doing that coming up very shortly. We're going on our one camping trip of the summer. But it's so cool. You know, it's so cool to see him. He's also a podcast producer.
That's convenient.
Yeah. So I have a free podcast producer, a really amazing, really cute one, really talented one. And and then, you know, we work from home and with our kids. And Ani actually was homeschooling this last year, our 8-year-old. And next year she's actually going to like basically like a nature school in the woods. And that's going to be really fun. So we made that decision. Kylie, you're going to say something?
I was going to say my niece and nephew who live in Maine, they do nature school and it's like the best thing that they have ever done. And then they'll be homeschooled. It's some sort of like mixed thing.
Like hybrid kind of thing. Yeah.
Like the most incredible community. I've met like some of them the one time that I was up there and I swear they know who I am. Like, because they care. You know what I mean? It's just.
Yes.
That's really exciting. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's good. You know, and I think it's actually a good sort of theme for sort of my journey and kind of how I approach all things. You know, I said this to Ani recently, you know, she's kind of like ebbing and flowing. One moment she's like, I'm excited about school. And then she's like, I really wish I could homeschool and I'm going to miss you and all this. And I'm like, well, I get all of that. Like, we can hold the complexity of that. Right, babe. Like we can navigate the and bothness of that. We can navigate the days when we feel like we don't want to go and be excited about the days that we do. I said, that's to be human. And also like, this isn't forever. It doesn't have to be forever. And so that mindset is one that I didn't necessarily have, right? I was raised in a very traditional world, you know, like many of us in a middle-class family, parents who both worked very hard. I went to regular public school. I was an athlete. I knew very early on that my parents were struggling financially, and I didn't necessarily understand the specifics of that, but I felt the burden of it because I watched how stressed out my mom was. And I remember thinking to myself at 9 years old, okay, you know, like I want to go to college someday. Chances are mom and dad are not going to be able to afford that. I'm going to have to figure out like what sport I'm going to play to go to college. And I had the context of that because my dad had been a Division I athlete, and he played football and track at UConn, and he had a scholarship, and that's how he went to college. And like, I just, my brain just kind of pieced these things together. Yeah. So when I started playing soccer around like 9, 10 years old, I made this decision like, okay, this is going to be it. And so I committed to that. And all through my teen years, it was like my job, right? It was like, this is what's going to get me to college. This is what's going to take the burden off my parents. This is going to be like my sort of thing. And it was. And then I did end up getting a scholarship. I played at UNH. I was the captain of the team. It was like this powerful tool. It was also a double-edged sword, but a powerful tool to help me, you know, accomplish that. The double-edged part of it was the eating disorder that I developed with over-exercising, under-eating, restrictive eating, all of the rules, all of the stuff that you can hide as a high-level athlete. That is a very real thing. I mean, I didn't have my period for years because of all of the, you know, the work. And so anyway, did that, played in college, still had an eating disorder. And this is interesting that this is the story that's coming forth, but it's feeling relevant for our conversation today.
I think it's perfect. And not to minimize it, I'm just really, anyway, didn't mean to interrupt you. Please go.
So in my 20s, you know, I kind of like had a huge implosion. So I ended up at around 25. Yeah, I think it was 25. I married my college sweetheart. And so he had been a fellow student athlete. And we got married and we had this beautiful big wedding where everybody from all over came. And it was like on the waterfront in Maine. And it was like this just, you know, dream situation. And we moved into our dream house we built from the ground up. I mean, I picked out every paint color, every doorknob, every fixture, the floorboards, like every single detail, like curated down, like precision. This is like all my dreams. Wow. And I'm living in this house and I'm living in this marriage and I'm living in this reality with myself, realizing like, I'm not going to get to be who I know I'm meant to be in this relationship. This like existential moment of, oh no, you know, I've made a mistake. And also like, I do love this person deeply, but I just know that my future self, and I just kept feeling like my future daughter, like she can't exist here. And it was like really, really deep. It was really deep and intuitive. And so I had to make that impossible, literally like life crushing decision, at 25, 26 that I was, that wanted to get a divorce only a year or so into our marriage. And just disrupt everything. I mean, and everybody that I love, like all of our friends, everything, just ripped the carpet out, moved out on my own. I was living alone for the first time in literally my entire life because I'd always been I lived with my parents, or then I was living with, roommates, teammates, and then I was with my partner. And so it was like, I never lived alone. And so now I'm alone for the first time. And I remember like those months were some of the most gruesome months of my whole life. I remember I would wake up in the morning and I get dressed, I put my work clothes on, and I would like barely even make it out the door without crying, like every single day. And you know, the blessing was I had a garage, like a one car garage in this place that I moved into, and I could just like park my car in there and hide away from the world and just be alone when I came home from work. And you know, work was like the place where I got to just be myself and like do a good job and be with people and then like come back. And I basically like had no friends because my best friend from college lived in Seattle, still does. And then, you know, all of our friends had been our friends. And so it's kind of like I like lost all of our friends in this sweeping decision that I couldn't really even justify to people why. It was just like, I can't do this. And so, you know, life goes on. I ended up meeting Ben. We ended up dating, and it was like really quickly, we just knew that we were each other's person, and, you know, life moved, and we ended up buying a house and starting life together. We got our dog, you know, as you do. And I remember this moment, you know, I was just about to turn 30 and my eating disorder, restrictive eating, was still a really prominent thing. Like I wasn't healthy in that way. Like I would have meltdowns in my closet with clothes. I couldn't open the fridge without getting stressed out about what to eat. He was a police officer and he would go to work and I'd be sitting there like getting anxious about wanting to eat a freaking rice cake with peanut butter on it. And, you know, it also was layered with, I started doing fitness competitions after my soccer career, which really, really in truth, like total transparency was just a way for me to hide my eating disorder. And it was like, if they can't teach me how to do this, then like, I'm a complete lost cause. I remember thinking that like, they're going to show me how to like get lean and how to get thin and like finally feel good in my body. And so I told myself that story. And I just realized, you know, I'm 29 years old and I just had this dream of my daughter. I had this dream of being a mom. And I just knew like, I cannot pass this baton on to her. Like it has to drop here. I cannot walk forth hating myself one more day. And so I started working with a psychologist, like a full on, he was like someone who worked with people who had eating disorders. And I'll never forget, you know, I'm sitting in her office week after week. And she said to me one day, like, Amber, you have an eating disorder, you know, and I was like, no, I don't. I was so indignant about it. I was like, no, I'm not anorexic. I'm still fat. I would say all these things. Right. And she was just like, okay. She's like, so what's it like when you go open the refrigerator? And I was just like, you know, I couldn't say anything. Yeah. And she was like, how do you feel about food? And I was like, I had no words. And she was like, you have to let this be okay. This is a coping mechanism. You've used this coping mechanism for your whole life, right? Like to deal with all of the things, all of your childhood trauma and pain. And it was just like such an illuminating moment of like reckoning and recognition being witnessed. And it was really this doorway that allowed me to like really start doing the deep work of becoming who I wanted to become so that I could be Ani's mom, you know, because I wasn't going to be that mom who passed that story, that body hatred onto her. I just made a decision that I wasn't doing that anymore. So I did the necessary hard work that went along with it. And it was gruesome, you guys. I mean, I remember in those days I'd wake up and before my feet even hit the floor, I'd already like grabbed my stomach, grabbed to feel what my body felt like. I would already start talking trash to myself. And I remember some of the things I employed were like, okay, you know, like self-coaching. If you can't be kind to yourself when you look in the mirror or in general, then I would literally like set this up and I'm like, I don't know if this is dysfunctional or not, but it works. And you're not allowed to use the mirror when you put your makeup on this morning. So like, good luck with that. Like if you can't be kind to yourself, then you're not allowed to use a mirror. And it worked because I held myself accountable. You know, it was like, yeah, that logically makes sense. You know, like I gotta stop doing this because it was getting in the way of what I really wanted for my life. And what I realized was, and I had known from childhood, I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, that the self-hatred that I turned inward at myself when I was like 5 years old had just metastasized into this disorder, this disordered way of treating myself. And I knew that I couldn't be who I was born to be. I couldn't be her if I continued on this path. And so I doubled down on that work and I got support so that I could actually heal it and I could actually release it. And so when I was 31, I got pregnant with our daughter and I had her right before my 32nd birthday in August of 2013. And, you know, I had a near-death experience during her birth, which is its own whole thing. But the moral of the story was my pregnancy alone was, it was terrifying, right? This idea of like, I'm going to like gain weight on purpose to grow up. And, you know, it was powerful because you guys, I got to continue to apply the work. I remember this one session I was in with my midwife and she was like telling me about my weight. And I said to her, and it was like such a powerful moment. I said to her, is it necessary for you to talk to me about my weight? And she's like, no, I mean, no, not unless there's an issue. And I was like, so can we from here forward, can you please put like a big star on my chart that I'm not interested in hearing that number or talking about it? And when I get weighed by the nurses, I'm going to just face the other way and they can just write it down. And I was like advocating for myself, right? Because it was like, unless it's relevant, unless we have an issue, then we don't need to talk about it because I know like I'm not equipped to handle that just yet. It's like, you know, if an alcoholic isn't going to go to a bar, like it's too hard. Right. And I couldn't handle that. And so I didn't. And I just you know, I'd say to the nurse, like, are we good? I'd just say that to her. Like, she knew what I was talking about. I'm like, we're good. We're good. We're good. Okay, great.
Yeah.
And so that was, I had to go through that process. It wasn't easy, you know, it definitely wasn't easy. I think in many ways, like, my daughter was small, and that was partly because the food stuff was hard for me, but she was healthy and everything was okay. But I just had to let it be okay, you guys. Like, I just had to go at my own pace and be on my own team to go through that process, because it was so deep and so intense. And there was so much, sort of there, the roots were so deep around my body and this topic, and becoming a mom was like this quantum transformation, as it relates to bodies, because now I'm getting to witness another child, specifically a girl, in her body, and very intentionally think about every message, everything I think about this body and how it relates to how she's going to think about her body. And it's been honestly just like the greatest gift, because it's not that I don't still have moments where I'm like, oh man, that bathing suit is like not my favorite moment right now. But it is just like, so not a thing. It's just like, not, there's just so many more interesting things for me to be focusing my energy and my time on than like how big my thighs are. And I would say, like, I've never felt healthier, more vibrant, more embodied, more like at ease. All of the different things, you know, different things I've had over my lifetime, I've dealt with like blood sugar issues and major digestive challenges with reflux and all of this. I literally had stomach surgery in my 20s because my reflux was so intense, and I got myself off of what was I on? One of those Nexiums or something like that.
Omeprazole.
Yeah. And I mean, there was a time after knee surgery, I was taking 4 Aleve a day. I gave myself a stomach ulcer.
Oh my God.
Like, I've done the damages, and I now am like, it's not even, these things aren't things for me anymore. I live in a completely different, you know, vibrational reality in my body, and I get to give that to my children. Like, that's who I am as a mother. And that's how we function, you know, on a daily basis. Like, I think about all the things that I do in a day to optimize how I feel in my physical body. And it's such like rhythm routine for me now. It's just such the norm. But it, you know, all of these choices have been so intentional, because what I really want is, I want to live the most clear and the most free and the most joyful and the most embodied. And I realized, like, all these ways I was dragging myself down in my body, I needed to take time to dedicate to that, and also do the mental health stuff. And I needed to make the big decision about my livelihood and my work. So I did this after my daughter was born, to launch my own business so that I could be in my right work, like, for my life, for what my soul's expression is. And so all of these things are like neutralizing, healing choices that have helped me to live very differently than so as I'm 40 now. I mean, just the shifts from where I was at 30, still in this self-hatred, you know, eating disorder, like really doing the healing work, but to like fast forward 10 years and look at so many changes, it's like, oh wow. You know, I'm proud of myself to look back. And it was always what I envisioned. Like, it was always, it was always what I wanted. And I, you know, the real testament is, my daughter's 8, she's almost 9. Never one time in her life has she made a negative comment about her own body. Number two, she just wears whatever she wants all the time, anytime, even if that's like nothing sometimes. It's like, she's just so, there's no think that she doesn't compare herself to other children and their bodies. It's just, it's not even a thing in her awareness. And that was one of my deepest commitments, was I wanted to protect that. I wanted to be deeply intentional about that. I never wanted to say something negative about my body in her presence, or at all, but definitely in her presence, where she would pick that up because of, you know, all the things that I learned listening to my mom and to other women. And so my body is a thing to celebrate. It is a treasure to behold. It is a miracle. I mean, truly, I've survived through so many things. It is a miracle. And I want her to understand that her body's a miracle. It's her chance to be here. And it's worth the commitment to take like really sacred care of it from the inside out.
Wow. Woo. Ooh, there's a lot. But I'm so thankful that you shared all of that with us. I can totally see Now, before we started recording, you guys, we had a conversation about what, like, because Amber can do so much and there's so much that she could share her wisdom on, but we were kind of just like, let's just see where it goes.
Yeah.
And now I see why the question of like, well, which story should I tell came up.
A lot of stories. Yes.
But I also love how each of them are so deeply and directly connected to your physical health. Like you had mentioned a lot of things that you went through. Yeah. And I'm sure looking back on it, you can see how the emotional piece of it really influenced a lot of that. And I think that's really powerful too.
There's also something really important to say here for other people who are listening who had any sort of trauma or abuse, particularly as a child, right? And trauma could look like whatever for people. There is a huge connection between abuse and trauma and gut health and issues with your gut. Huge. There's like a lot of new research coming out in that field. So if you are one of those people, and maybe that will help you start to connect some of the dots and help you understand that there are now two access points for healing. The mental health piece of it will inform the health of your gut and vice versa. So, you know, tackling from two sides could be, when the time is right for you, really, really validating. I mean, there's a lot to be said there.
Yeah. And then, I've done extensive gut healing too. And I think that's in my 30s, like extensive. Still to this day, there are practices every single day to take care of my microbiome and to really attend to my gut. It has had many expressions in the way of, you know, eczema or gluten intolerance and things like this. And every one of those details, one of those, they're inroads to the healing process. And yeah, it's like, there's just been so much of that behind the scenes in all of it. And you're right, Kylie, it makes just such an enormous difference.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like each thing that you tackle provides a new opportunity to move into the next thing that needs to be tackled, which can also feel never ending and totally overwhelming. And in some ways, in some ways it is, you know, in some ways it is. But I think it can also be very soothing mentally to think like, okay, one step at a time will naturally and literally lead to the next step. I wanted to ask though, Meg, I don't know if you want to talk about this. I don't know if your mom listens to this or not, but, and I don't know if you care, but
go for it. Let's just,
I know you have a sister, and
I do.
Do you remember picking things up from your mom about the way that she,
this is of course, no, like, I know that we all were just doing the best that we can. Like any mom out there, any person out there, I know it wasn't intentional. And it honestly didn't affect me that much. Like, I don't think. But I think there were other sources in my early life is what I'm trying to say, that I picked more negative things up from than her. If anything, I picked up a lot of positive stuff from her too. But I do remember her making comments about her body. And on the other side of it, my sister and me always had this really fun, like she had these like those like old Cher workout tapes, like the aerobics.
My mom was Jane Fonda all day.
Obviously.
Yeah. And me and my sister and my mom, like that was something we did to bond together, as we would like do those exercise tapes.
That's different though. That's so sweet.
But what I'm saying is like that it is sweet. And that's like such a positive memory for me. So that to me, I think outweighs like some of the, and my mom would never make negative comments about us or anything. It was mostly just her internally talking, but about herself, but it did have a positive, but to answer your question, yes, I did.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I ask because I know a lot of the people listening are moms, specifically new mothers or soon to be new mothers. So that little side note there, I think, is probably something, I don't know if it feels abrasive or helpful to you guys, but it's going to be one of the two.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure a lot of new moms are like, oh my God, I didn't even think of
that. I know. You are actually, and they'll be right. And so it's like, you know what? It's called the circle of life, Kirafiki. But I would say, I would like, just do your best, you know, just do your best. Like, I'm screwing her up in other ways. And so, you know, it's like, we all are here for our own soul lessons, and we're going to get them the way we're meant to get them. And I just say, keep doing your best, because you're doing great, mama. You know, you're doing great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just, in my head, I, it's a personal choice of mine and my husband's that we are not having kids. So I don't have this worry for myself, but in my head, I'm sitting here just kind of thinking, you know, I just feel like the best you can do is just hope that whatever way you do mess them up is going to be like a helpful way. Yeah. You know what I mean?
For sure. I mean, yeah. Okay. My question, Amber, in a way you've already answered this question, but I think you're going to get what I mean when I ask it again. So hearing your story and hearing, you know, you're married and you just feel this thing that you know with zero evidence to be able to point to and say to other people, like, can't you see this? This is my proof, so to speak. Mm. But you know, and also speaking about the person I knew I was meant to be. Mm. Mm, not a thing that you can like spell out and show somebody, here you go, this is it, right? So this is, these things are all, right, this intuitive, the intuitive side of being a human being, which comes more naturally to some than other. I always have a really hard time explaining that piece. Like, I don't know how to tell you why I made this decision, but there's nothing that you can say that's going to make me change my mind. And it's not about like sticking it to you or sticking it to the man. I don't know how to tell you. Please accept that as being good enough. But this is what I need to do, or this is my decision. And it's just because it's my gut feeling, pun intended, right? Mm. What words can you, like, how do you explain that, especially when you are talking about making a decision like ending a marriage that, like, you know, these are families and people that are impacted by this stuff. I know. So because it might not be for other people a marriage, it might not be having a daughter, it might not be these same things that, damn, if people don't relate and see themselves in their own versions, right? So how do you decide? For example, I just decided one day I was going to stop. I just decided one day that I needed to do this thing for myself, because I know what you mean in a way. And I also am still feeling like, what the fuck do you mean you just decided? Like, what do you mean you just knew? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What words can we put to that, if any? Because I think it's really hard for even intuitive people, Meg, to understand when you're...
I love that you give me that title. Thank you.
Meg, please. do you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm saying? Because I know people are listening. I'm like, what does she mean she just decided? What does she mean she knew? Like, she knew, she, you know?
Mm. You know, I think, well, for me, if I go all the way back in the rear view, you know, my story is unique, and I was testifying in court at 5 years old. You know, I was standing in front of a room full of adults telling my story, testifying against my abuser. It's not a common, blessedly story. I had parents who believed me, which is a huge privilege and a huge gift. And they stood behind me and stood beside me. And my mom even went and like fought for a law to be passed in Massachusetts after that happened. And, and with other parents of kids who were survivors of abuse in this way. And so, you know, I felt this like tap at a really young age, this like sort of spiritual voice saying to me, like, this didn't happen to you for nothing. Like, you're here to help other people. And I had a vision at a very young age of me writing books and me speaking. And it's, when I say this now, like, oh yeah, of course you did. It makes so much sense. From age like 5, when I had that vision, until 34, it made no sense. Yeah. Like, I was working in a corporate job after graduating college. I was the director of marketing, and I did corporate sales and things like that for a collegiate athletic department, my alma mater, right? So I eventually became a teacher at the university, and I became the president of this association. And so I was like doing speaking But do you see my point here? Like, that channel didn't really make sense. Like, I'm a collegiate athletics administrator. How does that translate to author and speaker in the way that I am seeing this in my head? Like, these two things don't add up. I was, and then I became a brand coach, like a business brand coach, but still felt like, but how do you get to books from here? How do you get to, like, we're still like lifetimes away from this, Amber, you know, but the vision was always like in the back. It was always kind of there. And I'm like, well, I don't know why I feel this and see this. And then I started taking action to create it. And I think like the real catalyst was in 2017, I decided to host my first live event, the Ignite Your Soul Summit, and like put myself on a stage and actually do it, right? Like actually do it. And it was a huge success. And then the following year we had another one. And then I wrote a book called Master Your Money Mind, and I gifted it to everybody in the audience. So now I was like an author. It was like a baby book in its first form, but like I had it printed and I gave it to them, and it was like, it was a book though. And now it's been republished and it's a bigger book and it's more of a book. It's still small, but it's a book. And then I, you know, went on and wrote Paddle Home and Quantum Wealth and blah, blah, blah. So point. Okay. So that's sort of my trajectory of how I got there. But I think for those of you who are like, yeah, when there's a vision, and not everybody has this, so I'm speaking just to the people that can relate to this right now. When there's a vision, you know, it doesn't have to make sense in terms of how it's going to come to fruition, but I urge you to just like be curious with it and to explore it and to play with it and to also understand that it's not anybody else's job to get your vision. It's your job to get your vision. It's not anybody else's business. And so when you kept saying the word proof, right? It's like,
yes,
that's the problem. Like that's the hitch in the giddy up, because you're wanting proof. You're wanting someone to validate you for something that has been gifted to you and that is yours alone.
And
that's where the conflict happens. Okay. Yeah. That's where the conflict happens. But I couldn't be, and this is going to sound maybe trite when I say it, but like, I couldn't be Amber Liljestrom. I couldn't be who I am if I was still married to my partner, because that's not where the rocket ship was pointed.
Right.
And it was a from a values conflict, right? Like I wanted to be who I am, but I couldn't fully be her in that relationship. And that wasn't fair to him, right? That wasn't fair to any of us. That wasn't fair to our future children. And he has children and he's in a happy marriage, right? So it's like, I couldn't explain why I felt that, but I did something that was like the moment. And I went, I'll never forget this. I was in this like really dark place and like things were really hard in our relationship. And I was just, I wasn't liking who I was being and I just didn't know what to do. And I just drove to the beach one day and I sat at the beach with a journal and I just wrote in this journal as if I were like, and I had a picture with me of my younger child self. And I looked at her and I asked her like, are you proud of me? Like if I choose to stay in this relationship, like the dream that you had as that little girl, am I being her right now? Because this is my chance to be her for her. And the answer was no. And I knew I had to do the impossible thing. I knew I had to walk up those 14, 15 steps, you know, into the kitchen and say those words that I did not want to say because I didn't want to break someone's heart that I cared about, that I loved. I was breaking my own heart. But I knew that I couldn't be who she needed me to be. I couldn't be who I had the dream of. My oldest dream is to be a mother. So yes, writer and all these things. But number one, it was always to be a mom. I couldn't be the mother to those children had I stayed there. And it's like, I can't explain that, but it isn't, it was an inner knowing and it was a willingness, Kylie, to listen to what my inner voice was saying. And I think that right there is the hardest thing. Because why would I want to listen to that when everybody on the outside is invalidating what my inner voice says? And if I don't trust myself enough to listen to what I have to say, then I'm always going to defer to everybody else's opinions about everything. And I'm not going to, it's going to feel very chaotic and very, very confusing. And so I had to create space to listen to my own voice, to hear the sound and the resonance of my own dream and my own vision. And be patient enough to not know how it was going to unfold, but just trust that its existence was meaningful. And that's where, if the dream is in you, it's for you comes from. And, you know, and I will say this, like that quote, we go into another story here. It feels important. That quote last year in 2021, after going through two fertility treatments, losing our pregnancy, not conceiving, 7 years of infertility after having Ani, and so deeply wanting to continue my motherhood journey and having to really reconcile with the end of my fertility way before I was ever emotionally ready to even know that, at the juncture of my dad's Parkinson's diagnosis and this feeling of like time and life and turning 40 all in this year, like this ball of like, I'm not ready for this like motherhood thing to be complete. Like, I'm not, to sit in that and to really let myself be honest, you know, about that part of what was coming through for me, right? To like not give up on the vision. But there was a moment last year where I sat with myself and I was like, if the dream is in you, it's for you, a bunch of bullshit. Like, I sat with that in the depths of that, in the pain of that, in the question of that. And the confusion and the not knowing of that, frankly. And for those of you guys that don't know me, that's like this saying that I've said and people share it all the time and it's on sweatshirts and stuff. And it's like,
she has shirts. She's like professional. Okay.
So it's like, whoa, you know, like I have to like reckon with that. And I was willing to not have the answer and to wait and fast forward to March of 2022, and we were chosen to be Alex's adoptive parents, and and here we are. And ironically, not ironically, right, I learned this later when his birth mom told me that her due date, her original due date, was actually the same day that I found out I was pregnant in 2021. So April 8th, 2021 was the day I had my positive pregnancy test, and a year later it was like his actual due date.
Wow.
Yeah. There's like so much synchronicity all around the timing of it all. And the reality is just, I think it's my willingness to go into the depths with myself, my willingness to feel all of the wrecking balls swinging by, all of the stuff, and to not do it by myself. I think that's another important piece, right?
I have support.
I have mentors. I have people, mental health support people, who've been with me on this journey. And I have amazing friends and family that I have that vulnerable relationship with. But the reality is vulnerability can't happen without truth, and truth can't happen without courage. And so all of those things lined up in little train cars, you know, within ourselves, it's just like these important commitments that we get to make, not only to ourselves, but to our dreams and to our visions and to what our soul's purpose and reason for being here is really about. And I believe every single person that is alive in this moment, well, A, is a miracle, and B, has a purpose and has a reason for being here, even if it's as simple as like just being someone who smiles at a person on the street. But we all have a purpose. We all have something that derives meaning for us. And I think it's a worthy pursuit to commit yourself to that in whatever way you can.
I love that.
Amber, where do you think the willingness to sit with the discomfort, to sit in that darkness in order to understand, in order to be clear on, where do you think that willingness comes from? Because people spend a lifetime.
Yeah.
I don't think I know. People spend a lifetime avoiding that, which makes sense. I mean, it does.
Okay. The reality is, I had a really traumatic thing happen to me at a really young age that really was super destructive for not only me, but for a lot of people that I love, family members, extended family members. And the truth is that person did that from a place of being a hurt person. That person didn't deal with their shit. And there were a lot of other people involved that never did and never will deal with their stuff. And I vowed for my whole life, you know, like that's really like, that was my 1+1=2 math. I was a super emotionally evolved kid. I had to be, I had to grow up at warp speed. I was in therapy at like 4, 5, 6, right? So I was already having these very deep conversations in a way that psychologists would tell you, like, that's not possible. And I'm just like hell, it's not possible. I have all of the memories vividly of all of it. I remember exactly how I felt sitting in that therapy room when they handed me a mirror. And they wrote on the back of it, Amber, you're beautiful. Every time you look in the mirror, remember that. And I wanted to smash it on the floor. I remember what it felt like. And not being able to say that to them because I was hiding my anger, because good girls don't have anger. I remember all of these feelings and all these emotions. I remember the day I said to my mom, I don't want to go to therapy anymore, mom. Like, I'm done with this. I'm tired of it. But the reality is,
yeah,
I knew that. I knew that that happened because this was a person that did not take responsibility for his own pain, and he projected it onto me. And mm-hmm. no part of that is acceptable, but I also understand it, right? And so therefore, I've chosen to be a person in my life that faces her stuff head on, because I'm the only person that I can ever influence or change. And mm-hmm. so I look at my stuff in a, yes, probably almost masochistic way in moments. But I think that that's actually a requirement to be human. Like, if you've got big stuff coming up, it is an invitation. I really see that as a doorway. And I've stopped making it shameful or bad to feel shameful or bad. I've allowed it to be good information and feedback to say, oh, something is really up here. Let me look at that. I get to let myself off the hook on this. I don't need to brutalize myself anymore. That is not a helpful pattern. And it is not one that I would want anyone that I love to have to go through. I do understand that they will. And that's yeah. theirs to work through. But I'm going to hold and be a person that believes in the goodness of them and always be that person for them. And thus, I can't do that for them if I'm not willing first to do that for myself.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's... I would also, to add to that, I would also argue that there's probably a lot of people listening, and I happen to fall into this category, I think, that maybe don't have experiences or don't really relate to having such vivid visions for themselves in the future. And what I can say for myself is there's been several times in my life where when I didn't want to face the thing I didn't want to face, my body literally refused to let me continue in that trajectory. Like I relate a lot to your experience about being with a partner that you knew you weren't supposed to be with. And I truly loved and cared for that partner for a long time, but eventually, and I didn't want, I loved him. I cared for him. I wanted all the things that he wanted for us, you know, but like, I eventually got to a point where I thought about going to see him or going to hang out with him. And I was like, my body like did not want to go. I was like, oh no, I can't go. And so it's like, there's been several experiences like that where literally I had this very visceral response to it. So if anyone's listening and kind of maybe saying, oh, that won't happen for me, or I don't relate to that, I would also argue if you're any, maybe you just, I fall into that category too, where I'm just like, I don't know about the, like that they, it's the body for me. And I think it sounds like that was for you as well, Amber. You had a lot of, even the health things you were mentioning too. I think that's also signs that your body is saying no.
Oh yeah. And I disassociated. So I think that is actually something I'm still working on, is the ability to discern between like what is pain that is information and what is pain that I'm meant to press on through because it's growth. So this is what I'm saying, like that part for me isn't like a clean line. As a Division I athlete, you are literally trained over and over and over to withstand and override pain. And so just recently, like right now, I'm getting treatments on my knee. I've had 3 knee surgeries on my left knee. And I've been, I just did neurotherapy for the scars. I just did exosome, like stem cell treatment, ozone, homeopathy injections into my, into this beautiful knee of mine. And it has been the most like disruptive and disturbing treatment protocol. I'm in there, I'm dripping in sweat. My teeth are chattering. She is doing this work on my knee. I'm afraid of a stupid needle. She's unlocking trauma. And every one of my surgeries, I had major traumatic responses. I have the, and she was like, well, you have the MTHFR gene mutation. I'm so sensitive. I've had reactions to literally everything without even understanding why, like, you know, in the hospital for weeks because they can't figure out what I'm allergic to. I can't take any of the pain relievers, like so much trauma. And so we've been unpacking that and like doing deep emotional somatic work through this knee experience. And that's been really discerning. But I had to say to her, like, okay, so when you mean, okay, like take it easy over the next week, like, what does that mean? Like, I need you to literally be like so specific for me. Like, can I swim? Can I jump on the trampoline? Can I go for a run? Can I mean, these might seem like logical things to be like, no, you can't do that. But I don't, my brain doesn't compute that because I was doing triple sessions when my body was screaming at me in beating down sun and heat. and you just push through it when you have 15 different injuries and it doesn't matter. You just tape it up and you get back on the field and take a bunch of a leave.
Oh right? My gosh.
So like that wow. Disassociation is like yeah. a strategy, especially mm-hmm. somebody with eating disorder, trauma, all that. So I've been like, whoa, I get to really look at that. Like, this is powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's probably a lot of ways. Like, I totally hear what you're saying about the athletic mm-hmm. world that absolutely very clearly teaches you to dissociate from your body. But even for Kylie and I, like, we danced, that there's a yeah. lot of issues in the dance world with that. There's a lot of issues, even just daily. Like, I remember, I don't know, I was at the school nurse because I had menstrual cramps and that no one would believe me, thinking like, oh, she just wants to get out of class. It's just like, there's a lot of things on a smaller scale in a daily basis, I think, that teach us don't trust our bodies or dissociate. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I really appreciate what you said about needing to discern between what is something that is actually a problem where you need to listen to your body and rest versus like, you're being a sissy about this, like get your ass moving, you know, because it is it's a hard thing. I mean, for example, let's take a simple example. The idea of moving your body around every day or exercising every day. Like, there are certain people where you need to be able to say, like, hey, I'm calling you on your shit. You're being a lazy ass. Like, let's go. And then there are people on the other side of it who have lost their periods because they're not listening. And they think that if I slow down, X, Y, Z. And I also don't feel like I always get a clear look at where that line is drawn. And I sometimes worry, like, oh man, I don't feel super energetic. Maybe I don't want to work out today. I'll go for a walk. Am I doing that thing? Or I'm like, do I need to just step up? And most of the time I err on the side of like, you know, if you try to, your body's not going to let you. So just pass that part, like skip that part. Right. But I do think it is a tricky thing to navigate. It's a tricky exploration to navigate.
Yeah, it really is. I don't have an answer to that when it comes to exercise and all that. After my C-section, I went the other way and I've worked out less in the last 10 years than ever. Like my former self would be like super just probably disgusted because that's how she operated back then. You know, but she'd just be like, what the heck? But I have had to really practice rest. I had to learn what rest actually is. I've had to learn how to trust my body in ways that like I used to think if I didn't work out, then something really like my body would just blow up or something. And I just, so now I like, I really have and I'm in a season where I'm excited for this knee thing to like, I'm ready for it to be complete because I want to reconnect with my athlete, but in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. And I still play soccer in a women's league, and it's really joy producing for me to get to do that. And I get to be her. And soccer was my first love, and it's an expression and an art for me. So to get to be able to get back on the field and do that is really important. So I'm grateful that I have a body that can still do that, you know, but I would say, you know, I hope this is opening something for those of you guys that are watching or listening, because we're not coming here with answers. We're just coming here to bring things to your awareness to say like, this is a real thing and it deserves your attention and it deserves your exploration.
Yeah.
I think that really is what all of this starts to come back to. And I think when I asked, where does that willingness come from? You have a very specific answer because you had a very specific experience. Yes. And I think a lot of people will relate to that. I think a lot of people will see themselves in that example. I think an equal amount will be like, well, what about me? Mm-hmm. And I think that it might be as simple and complicated as simply making the choice.
Yeah.
As simply just saying, I've had enough and I'm making the choice today. And I'm saying that from, you know, I think that different things happen that way for me. And I think that previously I would hear somebody say that and be like, you obviously don't know what you're talking about. You can't possibly feel what I'm feeling if you're capable of just making a decision. However, I think it does get to that point. I think it can get to that point rather. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
And I think Amber made a good point about it. It didn't sound to me like you were always saying you must choose because you know what to do. I think at some points you were also saying you can choose to get curious about how you feel in your situation. So I feel like that.
Yeah.
To
and
me,
I would say cumulative, right?
Like, yeah.
It's, I'm 40 now, and you know, it's funny, like I'm so old, but I probably, a lot of you guys here are not 40 yet. So, you know, like that's great. Good for you that you're not. Enjoy where you are. Like, celebrate. Truly. I mean, like the 30s are awesome. I love the 30s. Like they were such an important decade for me. I'm really, I major growth and major shifts and moves in life and, you know, foundations built. And I'm just really proud of the body of work that was my 30s, like the transformation that happened in those 10 years. But I would say, Now I can practice that. But I also do this as a profession every day. So like I have people coming to me with their struggles and their challenges and their problems every day. And my work is to reflect to them, you know, different questions and possibilities to help them look at that in a safe and supported place. But that's what I do for my job. So of course, if I can do that with you, you know that I'm doing it with myself.
Right.
And I also have support. I have mentors that I can text and go, I just hit a tripwire. I don't know what this is about. Like, this is really catching me off guard. Can you support me with this and give me some reflections, you know? And I have that. I've installed that in my life so I can have that support to work through this stuff.
Yeah. I think that's a really... Do you have one other? I was going to say that's a good question, a segue into the work that you do, Amber, and you can tell us where everyone can find you. But Kylie, did you have another question?
No, I was headed that same direction. Only okay. I was also going to summarize by saying I think some of the themes here are ironically counterintuitive to each other, which is that you can't do it on your own. You shouldn't try to. Probably most of you have experienced that path and realized the truth of that. And also, at the same time, you're the only one that can do it. Mm-hmm. What's it? I mean, I think that's going to be something different for everybody. But you shouldn't expect yourself to do it on your own, but you do have to do it yourself on your own.
Yeah. There's not a coach on the planet that can lift those weights for you to help your muscles grow.
Mm. Bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah, the healing has to be yours. Gosh, I hate myself for even saying that. What does that mean? The healing. Who knows? But you'll know. I feel like I know when I hear myself say that what it means for me, but I think that's, you know, intentionally broad because Meg, that means something different to you and Amber to you. So Amber, tell us where people can find you and how they can look into you or how they can work with you, what you do, blah, blah.
Yeah. So I'm a coach, as we said, and I love getting in the deep waters to help you kind of learn how to swim the way you want to, you know, and build what you want to build and work through what you want to work through. And so, yeah, Kylie could tell you more, but I'm over at amberlilystrom.com online. So you guys can go peruse over there on the website. I have different programs and different ways to work together. If you're looking for, you know, one-to-one mentorship or a group program like the one Kylie's in. You know, there's lots of options. And I'm also over on Instagram. I love Instagram. Just my name at Amber Lilystrom. If this was a helpful conversation today, I would love it to support my sisters here. If you could share it, you guys, and just tag us so that we see that you're doing that, because, you know, this is a labor of love and a commitment and a devotion, and we're all in this together. And just Kylie and Meg, thank you for your commitment to create this podcast, this platform, so we could have this conversation today. It was so, so meaningful for me. So thank you.
Yeah, it was really meaningful for me too. Thank you so much for your time and your wisdom.
I think these conversations, they're like heart chats. That's really what they feel like. They're like soul and heart chats, and they're hard to put a theme to. They're hard to put a title to. They're hard to say, like, this is the plan, because goes against the very nature of what it is. So, you know, I know for myself that I require those people in my life. Meg, this is why we do this, right? Mm-hmm. Amber, you're one of these people for me. And I feel deeply and very, very strongly about that and about my connection with both of you. And I will say just one more little bit about Amber. I think that the word coach is like a thing now, right? It's like, eat your fruits and vegetables. Like, everybody thinks they're a coach. Everybody might be, right? I'm not belittling. I just think it's one of those things. It's kind of like a buzzword now. And it makes people like, oh, am I being sold? Oh, am I being like, is it one of those things again? Yeah, that's just not what this is. You know, there's a human being on the other side who gives a fuck about you as much as you do. So I think the right people will hear that in the right way. You'll know what I mean. So thank you, Amber, thank you. Thank you for being with us. Go back outside on the dock immediately. Immediately.
Thank you so much for spending time with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, sisters.
And as usual, all information will be in the show notes for those of you who want to connect with her and work with her. And thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Okay, don't go anywhere. Thank you so much for listening to Curious Women. If you love our show, you can support us by leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And if you know someone else who would really love our show, please share it with them too.